see if this thing's working. Wanna go there now? Sure, you just have to give me a second, because I'm not too familiar with this radio to really go. You have to kind of bear with me as far as getting there. But sure, go ahead and click something.
Stand by. Let me see what band I'm gonna use. We'll try it.
Okay.
Well, before I ask that, what antenna you use on HF, and what bands can you operate on?
Well, I have the G5RV, the 2 foot dipole I have. With the tuner, so usually I can do 20 meters, no problem.
Okay, you did say that. All right, let me make a try 20. Let me find a clear spot. KC2KXK. You want to try 14330? Looks like it's pretty clear.
Okay, 14330. That's upper?
Yep, it's upper. What's your... I forgot your name. It's Felix, right?
Oh, my name is Keith. Give me a few minutes and I'll get up there. I just taking a while to figure out how to do it on this radio. Copy, Andy?
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I called you Keith. I mean, Felix. You are Keith. Alright.
Alright, I'm going to change over 14330 upper.
Okay.
KC2KXK.
Yeah, go ahead, W8CDO.
KC2KXK.
Yeah, go ahead, I just called you, did you hear me? Yeah, KC2KXK, W8CDO. Yeah, KC2KSK, WHCDO, you still there? I don't hear you on HF. I called you, and you didn't come back, and I'm calling you here, and I'm not sure where you are.
Cup. copy you on the HF frequency, but you kind of came in, but I don't think you could hear me.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking for Keith. I was just talking to him, but he wanted to make a test. We'll check out his radio, but he didn't know exactly how to set it up, so I'm not sure if he's on.
CGS here.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing TG Keen. He's down at 14.330. He's calling off out your call sign, his call sign, and even Hal is trying to make contact with him down there.
Oh. Okay. I don't hear him. I don't hear Hal. I don't know anybody.
Well, you know, 20 is being 20 right now.
I'm waiting. I'm not, Oh, I see. it would help if I had an antenna.
I think that would help a great deal, and I'm sure that Dick would have some thoughts about that.
Okay. I'm just realizing that why I'm not hearing. I got no antenna on this. I don't know why. Let me see what's going on over here. I'll be right back. WHCDO. You still there, boy? WHCDO.
We're still here, and I think he's still there. He's kind of wavering between frequencies.
Who is?
Keith Guy, I assume it's him. I can barely hear a voice, but it seems to be kind of drifting back and forth.
Oh, well, apparently something happened to my antenna tuner. I'm going into an MSJ antenna tuner, and that's going into my lateral line. But for some reason, the signal going in, the antenna tuner, but nothing coming out.
Lucky it's just a switch that needs a little spraying.
I just flipped the switch. I haven't touched it. But now that I recall, this morning I went on the air briefly, and then I got called away, and I thought I smelled something burning, but I didn't really. It's funny. I was on AM, and I smelled something, but I didn't really think about it, because I had to get called away, something, to take care of something, and I didn't go back to it. And I think something in the antenna tuner went out. I got to open it up and see what happened.
Oh, is it an old one, or one of those newfangled auto-tuners?
It's an MSJ. It's an old one. But I didn't see any smoke or anything. I just smelled something funny. And now I'm realizing that it's not working. Or at least there's no connection to that, to the antenna. And I didn't look at the meter, and I realized the SWR is sky high.
Well, I'm sure you'll fix it rather quickly. Those things are built like tanks, fortunately.
Yeah, it is. It's not hard. I just have to, now I think I know what I heard, or what I smelled. Okay. I realize now, I wanted to make a test with Keith, but, apparently, well, I'm not hearing him, obviously. He's not going to hear me.
How strong his signal is, I can barely make him out. I could make out his calling of you and calling himself, and I could hear Hal at about the same strength, but it certainly was not more than a few decibels over the noise floor.
Okay, I didn't hear him at all, so if you heard him, I would hear him, because I'm a lot closer. Alright, let me, I can't look at this now because I'm actually waiting for response from one of the guys I work with at work for my schedule for tomorrow. I gotta see where I'm going. I get it via computer, and I gotta make sure that I'm gonna be in the right place at the right time.
Very good. I just wanted to check in and tell you that what was going on 20 meters, so you weren't confused by it. Go and do what you have to do. We all have things to do. This is AC2GS, and I guess I'll be clear now.
Yeah, good hearing you again. I was wondering, my S meter is sitting on about an S3, and usually it's a little bit higher than that, well, depending on the noise level, but it's pretty quiet. But obviously now it's going to be quieter. All right, I gotta look at this. All right, thanks, Roy. I'll talk to you. I really can't do it right now. I got to get back to the computer, but I don't know. I'm not sure where Keith is. If he found, if he's on, I guess he's on. But I can't hear him. He's not answering me here. I called him here. I don't know where he went. So I guess he's, maybe the radio that he's using, he can't listen on both bands at the same time if he's using a 706. I'm not sure if it could do that. So I guess while he's on HF, he can't hear on this band.
He didn't sound like he could do those things simultaneously, and maybe Hal distracted him or gave him a different frequency to try out. I don't know. I didn't really listen that long. Then I just turned it over to talk to you up here.
All right. Yeah, no, I got you. All right, I'll have to look into this. See what's going on. All right, see you later. I'll talk to you. Thanks. WHCDL.
I'll talk to you when I talk to you. This is AC2GS. Going clear again.
KA2GES portable for a check. Anyone around? KA2GES requesting a radio check, please. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Station testing, you're coming through loud and clear into the repeater.
GEF portable.
Like I said, you're coming in loud and clear into the repeater, sir.
K2GEF clear.
Here is WB2EAB Mobile, listening.
Tonight at 8 o'clock, W2VL repeater system.
W1AMR. listening.
Net tonight at 8 o'clock. Welcome to the W. Net time.
Good evening. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And at this time we begin the tech rascal, as we've done for 34 years. Each Sunday night, a group of enthusiastic guys who are curious, want to know more about radio and how it works, gather and teach each other what they've learned. Antennas are a subject that are often discussed on this repeater because that's the most common denominator between transmitting and receiving. It takes a good antenna to do both. Either one of those lacking, and the contact is not as enjoyable as it could be. Antennas are a slightly mysterious subject. The people who are good at designing and using antennas have, throughout their experience, through their apprenticeship, so to speak, they've learned a number of rules of thumb that work for them. And those rules of thumb are quite different than the way antennas are taught in our technical schools. So those rules of thumb, you're going to hear them being discussed on the TechNet, and you'll be getting the inside information. We might even have a discussion on snowblowers tonight, because quite a few of us, we've got a significant amount of snow in the last few days, and those snowblowers for some of us were very important. I've got a 90-foot long driveway that's two cars wide. If I had to shovel that by snow by hand, my back would be in pretty bad shape by now. So properly maintaining a snowblower and keeping that carburetor working correctly, there's a little bit of art and science to that that we've all discovered. A person signs into the technical net because he does have a question or a comment. He signs in by giving us his call letters, his name, and the word yes, confirming he does have a question or a comment. You need not sign in because you're listening. After 34 years and 1,648, this is TechNet number 1,648. After 1,648 TechNet, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. So, if you guys have got questions and comments, give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening.
K-A-2-G-E-S. Name is Bob. Yes.
Okay, Bob. K-A-2, is that Golf Edward Foxtrot or Golf Edward Sierra? Go ahead, Bob.
Golf Edward Foxtrot.
Okay, we got you right. We got you right, Bob. So Bob's checked in. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now.
2FIU George, yes.
Okay, Mr. I missed the prefix, George. Blank 2FIU. You've checked in many times, I should know. What's your prefix, George? K2RIW.
Kilo Delta 2, Fox, tried into your uniform.
Okay, we've got you, George. Okay, we've got Bob, George. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
KD2KNL. The name is Ed. Yes.
Okay, you're going to have to give me the prefix again, and with the suffix Kilowatt November Lima. Back to you, Ed.
Holding the button down, apparently my radio's not working.
Kilo Delta 2 Kilo November Lima.
We got you at that time. Kilo Delta 2 Kilo November Lima. Okay, Bob, George, and Ed. Anyone else to check in? Please give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW. K2RIW listening.
Is this radio working or not?
Okay, we got Rich and WA2RYY. Okay, WA2RYY, well, you're coming through very well, Joe. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
WS2N Paul, Rock Kokomo with a space report.
Queen Yankee Whiskey. Name here is Joe, and yes.
Okay, we heard the Queen Yankee Whiskey and Joe. Well, what's your prefix, Joe?
This is Kilo Charlie 2, Queen Yankee Whiskey. Name here is Joe, and yes, from Harrison, New York.
Okay, you're sounding good from Harrison. Alrighty, we've got more than enough to get started. So Bob was the first guy on the list. Kilo Alpha 2, Golf Edward Foxtrot. What would you like to discuss tonight, Bob? You got the floor, K2RIW. You're number one on the runway.
I pulled with Joe, WSON, Paul with the space report.
Yeah, we got you, Paul, not to worry. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, thank you, Dick. Alright, I recently purchased a quad band radio. It does 10, 6, 2, and UHF center, 70. Now, the only thing I have is I have a dual band antenna for the VHF and UHF. Now, I also have a 10 meter antenna and a 6 meter antenna separate, right? And I want to put it all on one mast, which I already have the mast up, and because I had a 706 basically with the same thing. But I wanted this radio because I could cross band. Now, the only problem is this radio, everything comes out of one antenna jack. Let me drop it for a second. Okay. I want to run I have the cable, 7/8 hard line going up to the mast. But how do I split it? One for 10 meters, one for the 220 dual band, and one for the 6 meter antenna.
You also said you want to run cross band. Now, if the radio only has one output connector, even if the most ideal antenna setup in the world existed, how would you run crossband with that one connector with that radio? Or are you talking about using more than one radio to run crossband? Back to you for clarification on that, Bob. K2RIW.
Okay, yes, the radio does crossbanding. It's a new radio that came out. It's a 9800. It's a TYT TH9800. And one of the features is it does crossband, which for me it's nice because I can go on 6 and talk on 2 meters. I can use my 6 meter portable and do things like that. But, yeah, everything comes out of one port. That's where it throws me. And I need a dedicated antenna for each one. I want a dedicated antenna for each band.
Yeah, give us some words on this one, Eric. K2EJ, K2RIWH. You can see I'm concerned about when you transmit from one particular connector on the back end of the radio and you're receiving simultaneously, unless that radio has got some pretty fancy filtering inside, what stops the transmission from not desensing the radio on the other band you're cross-banding with? K2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2J. Well, I don't know if you noticed, but even the HTs, it'll even cross band between, say, 6 and 2 meters, or between 2 and UHF. But the solution to this gentleman's problem is a company called Diamond. There's another one, Dawa. There's another Japanese one. They make not diplexes, but they make quadplexes. They make a connection to the radio, and it comes out with four more connectors, and each one, of course, is a bandpass filter. And they work okay. You pay for it, it's losses, but that's life. K2RIW, K2J.
If I understand correctly, Bob, you intend to put up a dedicated antenna on each individual band, an antenna for 10 meters, an antenna for 6 meters, and so on. And the good news is that on one mast, if you so choose, you would be absolutely amazed at how close you can stack those antennas with very little interaction. As long as each antenna that are stacked close together are on a different band. a 10-meter antenna, for instance, sitting alongside of a 6-meter antenna. When you're feeding signal into 6 meters, the signal will go to the 6-meter antenna. The 10-meter antenna will present a very high standing wave ratio. Usually that means a very high impedance. That means none of the signal will go there, even though it's on that same cable. And simultaneously, the capture area of each antenna, the 10-meter antenna will have no capture area on the 6-meter frequency, and vice versa. So you can stack them a couple of feet apart. The only thing you got to worry about is that when the individual antennas, let me drop, when the individual antennas are stacked super close, the extra capacitance of the nearby 10-meter elements lying very close to the 6-meter elements, for instance, will add some extra capacitance to the ends of the 6-meter elements, and it will tune it to a slightly lower frequency. A couple of foot of spacing usually makes that effect go away. And, as you probably know, there are antenna designs where 6 and 2 meters are on the exact same boom. It's a dual-band Yagi. And so the extra capacitance of the nearby elements was compensated. The designer shortened the elements on, say, the 6-meter elements a little bit in order to compensate for the extra capacitance, bringing it to a lower frequency, shortening for them back up to the right frequency. So the stacking distance with detuning, with retuning, can be made extremely close. So now, in your case, the switching, you could have a fancy relay arrangement up there which allows you to select from your 7/8 inch hard line which antenna you want to transmit to. But if you intend to do cross-banding and transmitting on one band and receiving on the other, let me drop. It's going to require a diplexing, a triplexing, a quadruplexing filter assembly. And so with the right kind of filter assembly, you can have one input connector from the coax cable, and each of the four output connectors will actually only carry, the 6-meter output will only carry the 6-meter frequency, and so on. So you're not violating any laws of physics if you buy the right kind, buy or build the right kind of a filter assembly which sends the right frequencies into the right antenna port all automatically. Your problem is you've got quite a number of choices here, as I see it, Bob. How many of the antennas are going to be dual band antennas? You want to do everything with one great big piece of coax that's very low in loss. That's kind of smart. Separate pieces of coax, some people do it that way. So switching, filtering, spacing, everything you're trying to do with care is all very doable with very little compromise as I see it. The only real compromise is that quadruplexing filter is going to possibly be a little bit pricey if you buy a commercially made product. Home brewing is not out of the question because the actual raw material that goes into a quadruplexing filter is probably only $15 worth of materials in there, but I'll be amazed if you can buy it for less than $180, if you know what I mean. I'm picking numbers out of the air. So you've got a number of choices. Back to you, Bob, for further clarification that you might would like to have. KA2, Golf Edward Foxtrot, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay. All right. You see, my problem was I have a 706 also. And that was not a problem putting, because I had the UHF and I had the 10 meters separate. And right now I have those antennas up there. They're on the mast and they have, they're on brackets that are hanging off about a foot separation from the mast itself. What happens? I have a couple of connectors. They're multi-port connectors. They're made by TXRX. And they were from a duplexing system. If I have one port for my hard line and three to each antenna, wouldn't it find...
Bob, you stopped mid-sentence, wouldn't it help, or something like that. You stopped mid-sentence when you started describing the multi-connector TXRX. So you might want to continue with the conversation from there. KA2GEF, K2LAW.
Okay. Yes, it's a TX-RX multi-connector. It's a splitter, actually, but it has three ports, and one port for the... it has four ports, one input, three outputs. Now, why can't I connect that at the base of the mast of each one? And why do I have to have filters? Wouldn't a single go to the right? This sounds stupid, but wouldn't the 6-meter single go to the 6-meter antenna and not the 10-meter or the dual band VHF?
With about 1% probability, the answer is yes. With about a 90% probability, Murphy's Law is going to come and get you on this one. And here's the confusion. If you built a fan dipole where you have one pair of two wires, you're feeding it with open wire line or a coax cable going into a balancing device. Let me drop it. And your fan dipole has got an 80-meter dipole, a 40-meter dipole, a 20-meter dipole, and so on. And they all come to a common point. When they're all fed with zero distance of phasing, zero distance of feed line between the antennas, and these are the centers of dipoles, in that case, you get absolutely beautiful automatic switching. When you're on 80 meters, the 80-meter dipole will present a 73-ohm impedance. All other dipoles will present an impedance of thousands of ohms. As such, only 1% of the power will go down the other antennas. 99% of it will go into the 80-meter dipole. And when you're on 40 meters, 40-meter dipole will present 73 ohms of impedance. And, the signals will not go anywhere else, per se. When you have a common port like that, all the dipoles are coming to one great big junction, so to speak, with zero feed line difference between them, no problem. But completely separate antennas, with separate length feed line between them, you've now got a problem. I'll give you an example. Assume I had an 80-meter dipole on the northern end of the house and a 40-meter dipole on the southern end of the house, and separate transmission lines coming from each of those dipoles coming to a common point. And now, at that junction where the transmission line feeds those two separate cables, you would say, hey, in the case of the fan dipole, the signal went down to the right cable. Why is it going to do that with these two separate dipoles separated by extra feed lines? And here's where you're going to get in trouble. The so-called impedance inverting problem, among others. When you're on 80 meters, the 40-meter dipole will present a very high impedance. However, if that length of transmission line from the junction going to the 40-meter dipole just happens to be an odd number of quarter wavelengths long, the open circuit on the 40-meter dipole gets reflected back as a short circuit. So when there's ever separate lengths of feed line between the two, the impedance inverting factor can really negate all this automatic switching. Therefore, in that case, the only way to be sure is a filter assembly that makes sure that only the 40-meter signal goes down the cable to the 40-meter antenna, and only the 80-meter signal goes down the cable to the 80-meter antenna, of my example. So when you've got lengths of cable between the antennas, you're just about forced into using this multiplexing filter, unless you're very good at one other thing. Let me drop. There is an equation where if you know the impedance of the transmission line, you know the length of the transmission line in feeders, inches, meters, feet, whatever, so you know the frequency you're operating at, you know the characteristic impedance of the line, and you know the frequency you're operating, you put that into a formula. And if you know what the load impedance of that antenna is, a 40-meter antenna fed on 80 meters, for instance, the Brown and Woodward curves will tell you exactly what impedance that antenna is going to present. And it might be 3,000 ohms of capacitive reactance and 20 ohms of resistance. But you know there's a way you can look up that impedance. You plug it into that formula, knowing your cable length and whatever. It'll tell you exactly what impedance you're going to get on the other end of the cable with the impedance inverting and all of that going on. Call it Smith. You can solve that with a Smith chart graphically. You can solve it with an equation. Now, if you're smart enough, let me drop it. If you're smart enough to choose just the right length of cable to all those antennas, you can get this automatic switching function without the duplexing filter. I didn't say it's easy, but it's possible. but the Cadillac way of doing it is with the quadruplexing filter. Because the chances of you solving the problem for two separate frequencies going to two separate cables to two separate antennas, that's very doable. When you start adding a third or fourth frequency, and now you're looking at all those combinations, the chances go down the tubes real fast that you might not be able to find a solution of what I'm talking about, particularly not completely across each of those bands. I wonder if that makes some sense, Bob. KA2GEF, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay. Yeah, it does make sense. Hold on a second. Let me just drop this for a second. Okay. It does make sense. I thought if I had equal length of cable, especially if it's low loss, you know, half inch, in between all the antennas coming from one central point, I could get away with it. But obviously not. I might have to go for the quad filter. All right, Dick and Alex, I appreciate the information. I'll try to get some sleep on this tonight. All right, KA2GEF. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yeah, what you're trying to do, Bob, a number of people are trying to do exactly what you're trying to do. Not quite as often are they doing it with four or five frequencies at once, two or three frequencies at once, but lots of guys are trying to do what you do. As you go down the tube, as you go down range here, later in time, and you study the problem, choose a solution, buy a component, install it, and actually get what it, get the results that you're going to get. Please come back and tell us whether it worked, whether it didn't work, what you're doing. So keep us up to date, because lots of other people have got your exact problem, and you're solving it for them, if you know what I mean. Next person was George. Kilo Delta 2, Fox India Uniform. How are those electrons treating you tonight, George? K2LAW in the TechNet.
Very good, Dick. I hope you're fine tonight also. And first of all, this is not a report on my flat top beam experiment. The weather's been quite prohibitive on me going with the next step, and I will report to you when I do take the next step. This is about feed line characteristics, a specific characteristic, and let's start with coax. Understanding that there are transmission characteristics with radio-grade coax that benefit us with less loss, the difference between RG58, RG8X, 8U400 low loss line, and understanding, won't go into the details, the different frequencies and the number of feet and how much less loss is going to occur during transmission. Let me drop. Can I expect that these characteristics of less transmission loss on the coaxes of different design and manufacturing grade, can I expect them to also be more reflective or more resistant to foreign RFI? For example, if the antenna device itself was not picking up the foreign RFI, and my tower was, or the vent stack, cast iron vent stack of the building was, and the cable is running close to either of those dense structures that are picking up the foreign RFI, can I expect that a coax that has better transmission or less loss for transmission to also maybe be better in resisting foreign RFI? Over to you, Dick.
Yeah, you've used some good common sense, George. You've assumed that if a cable has more insertion loss, the insertion loss is creating leakage. And because of the law of reciprocity, whatever the insertion loss transmitting in one direction is going to be equal to the insertion loss receiving back in the same direction, reversed, if you know what I mean. So you would believe that a lower loss cable has less leakage. Good common sense, almost always not true. I'll show you why. If I started off with a piece of RG58, and if I'm using it on a ridiculous frequency like 432 megacycles, it might have something like 15 dB of loss per 100 feet. And if I'm using the double shielded version of RG58, which is called RG223, its shielding characteristics might be 110 decibels. So here's a cable with a whole lot of loss, and yet it's extremely well shielded. The loss is coming from the fact that it's a small diameter cable, therefore the center conductor is not a very big diameter. The resistive loss of the center conductor is one significant factor. The dielectric loss, particularly the polyethylene insulating material, that's another big loss. Your lower loss cables usually are larger in diameter. Usually they have dielectric material that's closer and closer to air, like foamed Teflon, for instance. And air-filled cable like RG, like a 7/8 inch hardline, has got very low loss for its diameter because the dielectric loss is gone. The copper is a great big diameter center conductor, very little copper loss. Let me drop. And then again, with the same, with the connectors well installed on that piece of 7/8 inch Andrew Heliax, the shielding might again be 110 dB. So you get 110 dB of shielding of 7/8 inch Andrew Heliax with well installed connectors and double shielded RG58 will also give you 110 dB of shielding. So the relationship between shielding and loss is almost no relationship at all. Good common sense, but no, because when it comes to insertion loss, if your cable had 3 dB of loss, a naive person would think that 3 dB of loss, 2-to-1 ratio, well, half the power is being radiated and half the power is going down the cable. Not at all. The loss is almost always, the loss is either resistive loss of the conductors or a little bit of dielectric loss of the insulating materials. Let me drop. Now, here's the real kicker. Arguably, the lowest loss cable in the world is 600 ohm open wire line. To the human eye, it looks like it's the most open structure in the world. You would say, how in the world can that be shielded? As long as your balloning structure does an extremely good job of feeding the 600 ohm open wire line with its 4-inch spacing, whatever it is, if it really feeds it in a truly differential manner, if at one instant of time the right-hand wire is plus 100 volts, and the left-hand wire is minus 100 volts, exactly 100.0 on the right and 100.0 on the left. You really fed them in the full differential manner. At a frequency like 80 meters, that could have 100 decibels of shielding of external signals that transmission line is exposed to, as long as it's not laying up against a flat piece of metal and one of the wires is getting more capacitive pickup from the flat sheet of metal and you've created an imbalance. So if you've used it in a thoroughly balanced manner, that open wire cable can also be very well shielded. And it comes to wiring a whole lot of very compact wiring in, say, for instance, a military box that goes on an airplane. A hell of a lot of the very well shielded signals going through that box. There may be 50 individual cables going from one end of the box to the other, coupling signals back and forth with the digital circuitry. Let me drop. And in many cases, those signals, those 50 separate transmission lines inside of this military box on an airplane, might all be nothing but twisted pair. A yellow wire and a black wire twisted together, couples the signal from output amplifier number one into input amplifier number two, if you know what I mean. Twisted pair, properly used in a differential manner, looks open as all hell, and it can be better shielded than a piece of coaxial cable in the exact same location. And the coax cable would take up a lot more volume and you wouldn't have room for the 50 signals. So shielding and what the eye sees and insertion loss, they've got this complicated relationship, as you can tell. Insertion loss of your cable, you go to the manufacturer, they'll tell you how many decibels you're going to get per foot. And most of the time, he's telling the truth. You know how many feet you're using, what frequency you're using it at, and therefore the chart's going to tell you what the insertion loss is going to be. But when it comes to isolation, shielding characteristics, that's a function of single or double braid of the shield? How tight is the braid? How well installed are the connectors? And is any of your circuitry doing anything else to feed some signal onto the outside of that coax cable? Like an unbalanced antenna on the far end could make the outside of the cable very hot. So that's some of the information I think you're looking for, George. KD2FIU, and you're allowed to ask more questions. K2IW in the TechNet.
Well, very good, Dick, that you had brought in some of the characteristics about balanced line. That is something that is another option over here. However, when I'm looking at the transmission characteristic of the line that is going to give you lower loss or a full outphasing of signal that is going to give you a better or almost pure velocity, what about foreign RFI? Foreign RFI that is being picked up by the hull of the plane, by the tower that you're on, by that vent stack, the cast iron vent stack that might be near where you want to run your transmission lines. And let's say that those large metal metallic objects are picking up a foreign RFI that your antenna device is not necessarily resonating to or picking up and bringing in. But you want to run by something that you know has the ability to pick up a lot of foreign RFI. Does a lower loss cable resist better if you have to go near the large objects picking up a foreign RFI? Over to you, Dick.
Good common sense you're using there, George. In general, the answer is no. A large metallic object, a smokestack, a water tower, your radio tower, a metallic flagpole, and so on. How much foreign RFI they pick up is strongly affected, not by their size, by whether or not they resonate at that frequency. I can have this metallic flagpole, a great big large diameter metallic flagpole-like structure, part of a cell phone antenna system, we'll say, very close to the transmission line of my antenna. And you would think that because of that great big massive structure, it's going to pick up a lot of foreign RFI. In general, the answer is no. If it happens to be a resonant length, that can easily affect the amount of signal it picks up by at least 1,000 to 1. But if it's non-resonant, you'd be amazed how inert that large metallic structure, your eye pictures that radio signal going through space, striking this large metallic structure. Therefore, you would think that it's going to pick up a whole lot of signal and couple it into your cable. In general, the answer is no if it's non-resonant. And your particular cable has a shielding characteristic. In other words, when I say 110 decibels of shielding, I go into a good radio frequency testing laboratory. Let me drop. I put a known amount of signal down a transmission line that has a good set of connectors on each end going into a good shielded dummy load. And if it's an open wire line, I make sure that it's being fed in a thoroughly equal, balanced manner. So I set a known amount of signal, might be 100 watts, down that transmission line into a dummy load. And then in that laboratory, I use sniffing equipment, as I would call it. In other words, a very sensitive sniffing antenna on the end of a cable going into a spectrum analyzer, and I hold it near the connectors, I hold it near the coax cable. I walk around the room and I really find out how much of that signal coming from my well-shielded transmitter going through that transmission line into that dummy load, how much of it's leaking into the room. And that leakage that I measure, it's going to be a little bit different if I make the measurement of leakage a quarter of an inch away, 1 foot away, and so on. So there's an inverse square law characteristic. But if it's a good piece of transmission line with good connectors, I might find that the signal leaking out of the cable is 110 decibels down. What is 110 decibels? Let me think now. 90 dB is a billion to one ratio, and that would be, that's 90 dB. 100 billion to one. is the ratio of signal leaking out of the cable versus going down the cable if everything is well shielded. So shielding characteristics, how much is picked up by nearby metallic structures, it defies common sense. I could have that transmission line that's well shielded directly running alongside of the leg of a water tower. I've mounted 1 inch away from the leg of the water tower, the whole length of the water tower. And this water tower is 110 foot tall, a huge, massive structure. You would think it's going to be picking up a whole lot of signal. Yeah, there's a little bit of signal on the water tower if the water tower is not resonant. Whatever the level of that signal is on the water tower, and there's ways I...
Repeater, time out.
There is ways I could measure the level of the signal on that water tower leg. And if I do the experiment correctly, I'll find out the amount of that signal from the water tower leg coupled into my transmission line will be 110 dB weaker. So there's a whole art and science to producing transmission lines that are well shielded, transmission lines that have low insertion loss, transmission lines that have just the right phase length to them, because I'm keeping track of the phase of the signal, not only the not only its frequency and amplitude. So there's a whole art and science to using good shielding characteristics. And insertion loss of the cable is not the main factor, opposite of common sense. There's other factors going on. What's the tightness of the braid? How many levels to the braid? How well installed are the connectors? Has the cable been kinked in a funny way so that the braid has been spread underneath the dielectric material, underneath the outer jacket, you don't even see it? You know, somebody has really done something to abuse the outside of the cable, but it doesn't show because it's a flexible piece of cable. So there's various things that can degrade the shielding. But properly used, coax cable, open wire cable, many kinds of transmission lines can be extremely well shielded. And when they're well shielded, whether the signal is leaking out when you transmit or whether the extraneous bad RFI is getting back in, the shielding works the same both ways. You get 110 dB of shielding, whether the signal is leaking out or leaking in. That's the law of reciprocity.
Sure.
Okay, Eric's going to say us a few words. KE2EJ, K2IW. Go ahead, Eric.
I'll tell you a quick little funny story. When Channel 21 used to be in Garden City, there was a tower there. That's exactly part of National Community College in that day. If you know George, K2IKT, he was the chief engineer of WLIR at that particular point in time, I think in the either late 60s or early 70s. Anyway, that tower was exactly a quarter way from WABC in terms of height. So the feed line for George's transmitter ran down the leg of the tower, ran into the building and went into his transmitter. Now, it's an old transmitter, let me have it drop. It's crystal oscillator, it looked like a tube. You know, it's crystal with a tube. It was an unshielded glass tube. And if you listen to the station carefully, you could hear 66 AM modulation. It wound up solving the problem by putting a coffee can over, a beer can over the crystal and grounded it to the chassis. But that's just, something that is exactly resonant, that it actually can pick up stuff on the outside of the shield when you're talking. I think it's stuff was inch 785 line. So mysterious things can happen when things are resonant.
Yeah, once something resonates, signal strength on it can go up thousands of times stronger. On top of that, shielding got a peculiar characteristic, which sometimes the electromagnetic interference experts will say the chain is no stronger than the weakest link. You've got a whole lot of components going from your oscillator, the multiplier assemblies, the preamplifiers, the amplifiers of the transmitter, the impedance matching device, the output connector of the transmitter, the transmission line, balancing devices, lightning arresting devices, the cable going up the tower, the connection to the antenna. There's a whole lot of individual components in that chain. And if any one of those components is there's a fault so that leakage occurs, you got 10 components and if one of them leaks, you can have a hell of a lot of leakage. And there's all kinds of ways that signal can be crawling down the outside of the cable It doesn't get into the cable. They're crawling down the outside of the cable all the way back to the shack. It gets into the oscillator of the transmitter, which wasn't well shielded, and the signal got in there by a sneak pass. So you got to find every one of these possible sneak paths. Got to find every link of the chain, if you know what I mean, when you really want to make sure you've got that 110 dB of shielding that the hardware is capable of giving you when everything's working right. Over to you, George. KD2FIU, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Thank you. I'm getting answers in the direction that is helping me right now. And the concept of leakage, whether it's transmit or receive, and the concepts behind resonance of the foreign RFI to the foreign main foreign object that I believe is picking it up. What is the resonance of that? But leakage is the first thing to work on. Very good. And by the way, I'll give you a psychologically sophomoric answer. It's not me, it's my friend. Hey guys, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. KD2FIU.
Okay, good luck with that study, George. And as you gain more information and do more experiments, let us know what you discover. Ed was next on our list, Kilo Delta 2, Kilo November Lima. Go right ahead, Ed, K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Okay, Dick, how are you doing tonight? Well, this might sound really, really basic, but I'm a relatively new amateur radio operator, and I just started to get into HF. I got a 10-meter rig, and I was looking around. I wanted to test it out, so I figured I tried to build a little antenna. I'm just going to let it drop. So now, I don't know too much about these things, but I'm trying to learn. So, I had a motorcycle parked out back with a 10-meter fire stick, a CB antenna, a fire stick sticking off of it. And from what I can figure is, you know, you have the one part of the cable goes to the fire stick, the antenna, and the other part is your ground plane. They're using, the other part goes grounded to the chassis of the motorcycle, and I figure they're using that as a ground plane. So I wanted to bring this inside and just make something. And do you think now if I just put one part going to the fire stick, the 10-meter fire stick, and what I did, I found it's like a 12-inch metal disc in my garage, actually a hood from a chimney, one of those chimeneras, and I screwed it to that, and I put the other part of the cable going to that. Do you think something like that might work?
There's sort of a yes and a no to that, as I see it, Ed. Under normal circumstances, assuming your 10-meter fire stick is a quarter-wave ground plane-like antenna, the ground plane, the counterpoise as it's called, it wants that to be the biggest piece of metal you can get. In the case of an automobile, on 10 meters, the automobile is a pretty substantial piece of metal. Let's see now, wavelength is 16 feet, half wavelength is 8 feet. The automobile is more than a half wavelength stem to stern. The motorcycle is nowhere near that big, but with a slight compromise, the motorcycle, all of the metal of the motorcycle is a fairly substantial piece of metal, almost good enough to be the counterpoise. When you start getting down to a 8-inch diameter sheet of metal, that's not enough. It's an action-reaction situation. Let me give you an example. Assume Arnold Schwarzenegger is a 200-pound guy. He's floating free in space, in the space shuttle, in weightlessness. He's in orbit, and